Nobody cares for you like family. Family Heating
and Air. When you call to have your home or business's heating and air serviced, what do you expect from them? The salesman in a colorful truck? Or do you expect a highly trained expert with your best intentions in mind? The answer is obvious. Call the company that treats you like family. My name's Malia, and I look forward to answering your call.
Family Heating and Air Conditioning is your trusted local independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer.
Nobody cares for you like family. Family Heating and Air.
Only the best. Run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, it happens, hire Hensley. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson, the other voice you hear on this program. Landon Coons helps us put it all together. We call it Beyond the Bricks, and we enjoy doing it each and every night throughout, in this case, this year, the late part of April, and then into May as well, taking a look at the personalities, the people, the stories, and the audio that makes the Indianapolis 500 the greatest race in the world, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the racing capital of the world. Mike, last night we took a look back at the legendary legacy of the Bettenhausen family, Gary Bettenhausen notably. Of course, his father, Tony Bettenhausen, his brother, Tony Bettenhausen, racers. And tonight we do begin, and I know that Kevin and Kurt talked about it as well, but off the very top of tonight's program, it is of the utmost importance that we pay our respects to the fact that we had mentioned, Mike, at the outset of this season of Beyond the Bricks, that Merle Bettenhausen had suffered a stroke recently. And the news coming out just a couple of hours before this airing of this program tonight, that Merle Bettenhausen, we lost today. And this was one of the true gentlemen from a true racing family and one of the true ambassadors of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Oh, I agree 100%. He was an absolute gentleman, couldn't have been a nicer guy. And we talked about those people who, you know, you could be mad at racing because he had that terrible accident at Michigan International Speedway where he lost his arm. And, you know, he could have been angry with racing. He loved racing. He loved talking racing. He loved racing people. He was a joy to be around. Every time I had the opportunity to talk to him, just couldn't have been a sweeter man. And it's very, very sad that we lost Merle Bettenhausen. I have a photograph of all three Bettenhausens together, and they're all smiling in that picture. And that's how I'm going to remember the Bettenhausen family, is always smiling, because they were just such a sweet, sweet, sweet man.
His first race was in 1970 in, appropriately, the Tony Bettenhausen 100 in Springfield. He was born in Tenley Park, Illinois, and would have been 83 years old on June the 9th of this year. But Merle Bettenhausen is one of those, I can think back to a couple of years ago, just personally speaking, but I think it represents in totality what he meant. I was doing my afternoon radio show at the time, and somebody said, there's a gentleman over there that would like to meet you. Wasn't that he wanted to meet me as much, Merle Bettenhausen, as he knew that I was an enthusiast for racing. He brought along with him a book on the Bettenhausen family and wanted me to have it. It was a great thrill and a great honor for me, because I knew certainly of the importance of the name, but also just simply to see the spirit of a guy that had so many lunches at Charlie Brown with Dave Scoggin and Robin Miller and all the guys over the course of the years, and an absolute giant that will be missed for sure within the racing community. We thank Merle Bettenhausen for his time, his efforts, and his nonstop work in being a champion for auto racing over the course of his life. Merle Bettenhausen will be very, very sorely missed. Tonight on the program, we take a look back at those names and personalities, the old timers that maybe you have not heard from over the course of time at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I can speak for Mike when I say this. One of the real thrills of doing this program is when people come up and they say, you know what, I heard audio for the first time. Or we've even had it be the case where someone has stopped me to say, I heard from a relative, a great-grandfather, a great-uncle that I had never heard from before in audio that you played on Beyond the Bricks. And that is the ultimate testament and the ultimate satisfaction for what it is that we try to do. I know I speak for Mike in saying how much we have an appreciation and a respect for all of those great drivers of the past. Tonight, we're going to talk about some of those old timers and hear from many of them, including some that were known as the Chicago Gang from back in the day. Talking about Emil Andrus, for example. That Chicago Gang ran in the 1930s, the 1940s, along with Tony Bettenhausen, Merle's father, and Paul Russo, Jimmy Snyder, and Wally Zale. But first, let's hear from that first name I mentioned. Here's Tom Carnegie with Emil Andrus. Mike, I love it because not only do you hear the epic tones of Tom Carnegie, but also just to hear from some of those drivers from back then, very cool to hear it.
Yeah, those kind of clips are a lot of fun because, again, sometimes these drivers can be remote figures. You see their names and on a list, but you've never heard them speak. So it's really cool to hear a guy like Emil Andrus, and especially when it's Tom Carnegie doing the interview.
And then, of course, there are other interviews that were part of that gang. You talked about that Chicago gang. We just mentioned it. Tony Bettenhausen, the aforementioned, because, of course, the father of Merle Bettenhausen. Tony Bettenhausen was one of those that he was kind of the leader of that gang back in those days.
Oh, there's no question about that. Tony Bettenhausen was absolutely the leader. And you mentioned some of the other drivers. I mean, you know, he unfortunately, obviously, Tony Bettenhausen lost his life practicing a car for his buddy, Paul Russo, who was also a member of that so-called Chicago gang. Jimmy Snyder was a great driver. Really, really well known in the late 30s. So that was a really good group of drivers that came out of that area. Tinley Park, I actually used to live in Villa Park, which is very close to Tinley Park, Illinois, and they're still very proud of the Bettenhausen family in Tinley Park, Illinois.
And again, that is a community along like that community here in Indianapolis and all communities that gather together for racing that are mourning today the loss of Tinley Park's own Merle Bettenhausen. Son, again, of Tony Bettenhausen, passing away earlier today. We heard from his brother Gary yesterday. So Tony Bettenhausen, meaning Merle's brother Gary. Tony Bettenhausen, their father, met with Sid Collins in 1952. This is a rare interview. It's a legendary one because it involves two legends. Of course, Tony Bettenhausen and, of course, the legendary radio voice of the 500, Sid Collins.
This is Sid Collins at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where the 36th annual 500-mile race will be run on May 30th. Our guest today is national champion Tony Bettenhausen of Tinley Park, Illinois. Tony has participated in five previous Indianapolis races. He also ranks among the all-time top-flight drivers on dirt tracks. Tony, I believe you won 8 of the 12 championship races run on dirt tracks last season. Is that right?
That's correct, Sid.
What do you think was the toughest race you encountered last year?
Well, the toughest race I drove last year was the 100-mile national championship event at Langhorne, Pennsylvania, because that's a round racetrack, and at that point, when you're driving on that type of track, rather, you are busy at all times. You don't have any time to relax your arms, and it was about 106 degrees that day.
You feel dizzy when you get out of the car?
No, but the heat is very difficult to overcome.
As bad as your Mexican road race, Tony?
Well, much worse than that, believe me.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Tony, from a driver's standpoint, what are the principal differences between dirt track racing and our big 500-mile event here in Indianapolis?
Well, here at Indianapolis, Sid, you drive your automobile with the same respect as driving down the highway. You don't want to do any skidding on the turns because at the speed you're traveling, you can't do any skidding. Now, on the dirt, you drive with your throttle. In other words, the harder you press down on the throttle, the more horsepower you apply to the rear wheels, and drive in a sliding motion. So therefore, that is the difference, and naturally, I have always preferred the dirt because I've done a lot more of it.
Well, Tony, last year you caused considerable excitement to us out here at the track when you spun on the southwest turn. What caused that spin?
Well, it wasn't that I intended to, but I was following Mike Nazareth very closely, and he was running in second place. Mike was towing me and helping me along about 4 or 5 mile an hour better than I could ordinarily run. And he ran out of fuel directly in front of me. I was about 6 feet away from him at the time. I had to pull brakes to keep from bumping into him, and therefore went into a slide, and that was the end of the race for me that day.
Well, we hope you have better success this year. In fact, what car are you driving this year, Tony?
Well, I'm driving the Belanger Special, car number 99, that was driven by Lee Wallard in last year's 500-mile race, and I hope I can come back and do as well as he did last year.
Well, you have a real record to equal. In fact, do you think that Lee Wallard's race record will be broken this year? And how about Walt Faulkner's qualifying record?
Well, the qualifying record, I'm sure, will be broken, and I think that there'll be cars that will reach 140 miles an hour out here in qualifications. On the distant for the 500 miles, 126.244 for Lee Wallard, there were only 8 cars running, and I'm sure that there'll be many more cars running this year. If there are, the record will not be broken. But in the event that there aren't, I'm sure that the record will be broken.
Well, Tony, if you can't win the national title again and the 500-mile race, which would you rather win?
Well, I would prefer to win Indianapolis because I won the national title last year, and therefore I would prefer winning out here at the Speedway. And if I do win at the Speedway, I'm going back out to win the national title for the second year in a row.
Well, Tony Bettenhausen, with the time trial scheduled to start May 17th here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, what speed do you believe is necessary to make sure of winning one of those 33 coveted starting positions?
Well, I don't think that we'll have a car starting in that race that doesn't attain the speed of 133.6 miles an hour.
Well, thank you very much, Tony Bettenhausen. Our time is up. We've been talking to the national champion from Tinley Park, Illinois, racing this year at the 500-mile race in Indianapolis. Be sure to be in Indianapolis for the time trials on May 17th and May 18th, May 24th and May 25th, and race day, May 30th.
Mike, when we talk about drivers from yesteryear, that also incorporates oftentimes great commercials, great jingles, and those companies that became kind of household names around the Indianapolis 500. That includes Stark and Wetzel. And if you were so lucky as to win the Stark and Wetzel trophy as the rookie of the year, you also then oftentimes got to do a promotional interview with Tom Carnegie. And that's exactly, Mike, what we're about to hear from next.
Yeah, and these promotional interviews were cool because they would bring, obviously, several drivers or officials and, you know, folks like that from the racing world into the studio. They'd cut about a 3-minute, 4-minute interview, and then they'd send them out to stations all across the country, kind of promoting the race and promoting the broadcast, things like that. So it's amazing that these things have survived. Because, you know, they were done for these radio stations. And, you know, the fact that we still have the opportunity to listen to these things years and years later, it's amazing. But as you said, what's neat about it is it was kind of a cross section. You have the biggest stars, perhaps, you know, last year's winner, something like that. But also maybe the rookie of the year or officials. Wilbur Shaw did several. Tommy Milton did several. So it's a neat cross section.
Jimmy DeWalt would finish sixth in his debut at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He made 8 starts. His first was in 1953. Started 21st, brought it home 15 spots higher in running after 200 laps and finishing sixth. That allowed him that Rookie of the Year, and it was the first of 2 top 10 finishes he would have in his 8 runnings at Indianapolis. And it also afforded him that interview with Tom Carnegie.
Reporting racing news from the International Speed Classic, the 500-mile race in Indianapolis. This is Tom Carnegie at the scene of action, where activity is at fever pitch for the big race on Monday, May the 31st. Let's chat now with the Speedway's 1953 Rookie of the Year, winner of the Stark & Wetzel Trophy, Jimmy DeWalt. Jimmy, is it tough to get in the starting field of 33 at the 500?
Well, Tom, I started down here in 1949, and last year was the first time I made it. And this year, so many cars are entered, it's going to be real tough.
It certainly is. Now, let's go back to 1949 and subsequent years. What sort of efforts did you make to get in the starting field? I think the fans would be interested in that.
Well, 1949, I passed my tests here, and the car that I was driving threw a rod through the block, incidentally, when I was qualifying. 1950, the car I drove wouldn't run fast enough. 1951, the car I drove, I hung it on the wall trying to make it run faster.
And laid up for a while then?
Just a stiff neck.
Well, fortunate.
1952, the car wouldn't run that fast, and last year I made it.
Uh-huh. And you got into the starting field. I think you started in about 21st position, and in order to win the Rookie of the Year honors, you must have finished up there toward the front and in the money, right, Jimmy?
26, Tom.
Mm-hmm. And your speed was 124.379 miles an hour, and not too many fellas have gone faster than that for the full 500 miles. I guess now you remember the Champion 100 Mile an Hour Club, right?
That's right.
And that's a fine honor. Now, let's go back to the matter of a rookie getting started out here at the 500. Is it difficult for a youngster like yourself to get a ride in a car?
Well, everybody that owns a car here, they have quite a sum of money invested in the car, and they want a person with a lot of experience and an old driver. They hate to give a young fellow a ride, so it's pretty hard around here.
Mm-hmm. Where does the average driver gain the necessary experience to get in the 500?
Well, now I think they gain it in midgets, Tom. I started out in big cars in 1947.
How old were you then?
About 21.
Just at the proper age of 21 to start driving. Who did you start driving for?
Well, I seen a race in 47, so I bought a car for $400.
A big car?
A big car, and I drove that in 47 and 48 till finally I sold it and got other rides with other people.
Yes, I think it'd be interesting to compare that first car of yours with the one that you'll be driving this year in regard to how much it costs. You say $400. What would you guess this beautiful creation you're driving this year will cost?
$35,000, they tell me.
Well, you got to be careful of equipment like that, don't you, Jimmy?
You didn't want me to scratch it.
And speaking of he, who is he, Jimmy?
Well, Chapman Root from Terre Haute. Uh-huh. They call the car the Sumar Special.
Anything particularly impressive about the car? Of course, it's a beautiful-looking car, but I'd like to know what's inside of it.
Well, the car is powered by an Offenhauser engine, and it sits 29 inches high, and it has what the new, they call an offset engine. The engine sits on the left-hand side of the car, and I sit on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm. What's the advantage of that?
Well, when I go in the corner, centrifugal force throws the weight to the right side of the car, and by having the engine on the left-hand side, it balances it up in the corners.
Mm-hmm. Makes it feel a lot better.
More stable.
Yes. Now, one question about speed before we leave the Speedway for this time, and that is, what do you expect to, what is it going to take to get into the 500?
Well, I think 136 and a half.
The very minimum, right?
I wouldn't sleep if I qualified 136.
Thanks very much, Jimmy DeWalt. And for thrills of the 500-mile race, plan to be an Indianapolis fans on Monday, May the 31st.
We continue to take a look back at some of the names of yesteryear, some of them still familiar and relevant today, but always fun to hear their voices. That's why we will continue to play them for you when we come back to Beyond the Break.
If you've got Target Circle 360, you've got to start using Shipt same-day delivery. Shipt is bundled with Target Circle 360, so with one subscription, I can order delivery from not just Target and grocery stores, but PetSmart, Lowe's Home Improvement, Michaels, and more. Shipt isn't just another perk. They were awarded the number one delivery experience by an independent study in 2025. So yeah, they're the real deal. Terms apply. Learn more at shipt.com/360. That's shipt.com/360.
Don't miss Renewal by Andersons one-month-only sale event. Buy one replacement window or door and get the second 40% off. Plus, enjoy zero down, no payments, and zero interest for 12 months. It's the perfect time to upgrade with windows engineered for strength, beauty, and energy-efficient performance. Designed for Florida's unique climate, our acclaimed Impact windows help keep your home cooler, quieter, and more comfortable. Offer ends April 30th. Restrictions apply. Schedule your free consultation at bestwindowsflorida.com. License CGC 1527613.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson, brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
And we thank them for their sponsorship that allows us to stay here within the Hensley Legal Group Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Bring you another episode of Beyond the Bricks, where tonight, myself, Jake Query, along with Mike Thompson, bringing back some of the voices of yesteryears. Names from the distant past. Mike, some of those names from the distant past are those that, like we have heard already, you know, you look back and you think, wow, significant contribution to the Motor Speedway and the race itself, and not forgotten names by any stretch, but names perhaps that we don't hear as often from year in and year out. Now we shift to somebody that I think has become one of the more famous names and staying throughout, even beyond their driving days, their portion of contribution to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, talking about Freddie Agabashian.
Absolutely, and I was fortunate enough to get to meet Freddie just a few months before he passed, and I told the story a few years ago on the show about how he sat down and broke my sunglasses, and I thought that was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me when I was 19 years old. I thought, you know, Freddie Agabashian broke my sunglasses, and when he handed them to me, and he's like, I broke your sunglasses, kid. You know, and I was like, I thought that was like one of the greatest things that had ever happened to me. You know, I was like, I didn't care. I was like, this is great. You know? So you're right. I mean, a name from the past that we know from a number of different things, from his driving career, but also from his great work that he did on the radio network.
11 starts in the Indianapolis 500. His first was in 1947, the last in 1957. Agabashian did have relief from Paul Russo in 1953, but he won the pole in 1952. More on that in a second. But you may not remember that he almost won the pole in 1950. He was knocked off of that situation, or that position, I should say, at the last minute by a rookie. And he tells a great story that you might not have heard before about exactly that.
I drove the Winds friction-proofing car, and that was a brand-new car of new design, the 3000 Curtis series, and I had 11 laps in that automobile qualified from the time I jumped off the airplane, and that was a 176 cubic inch supercharged engine. It had a centrifugal blower on it, and it was one of the new Meyer Drake engines, and we broke the records for a rear drive. We broke the records for a supercharged car, and as a rear drive car, as against a Novi, which was a front drive car, as you well remember. And we broke the records there, and we were sitting on the pole. And little Walt Faulkner was having a great deal of difficulty trying to make the B race with that car of his. He's, man, I'll never make the program with this goat I'm driving. And he wanted me to take a ride in it, check it out, and I took a ride in it, checked it out, told him what was wrong with it, and that was real late in the evening. And as he pulled in, he says, man, how's that look? That feels a little better. And I said, yeah, you're ready to qualify, you little runt. Let's get you up to the starting line. And he said, no, I don't want to qualify. And I says, you got about 8 minutes to do it in, and started pushing him backwards under protest while he's trying to get out of the car. He says, what do you want to wait till tomorrow for? He says, I want to change the tire, I want a little more practice, and so forth. Anyway, my car owner, Ed Walsh, my chief mechanic, Harry Stevens, and J.C. Agajanian and Clay Smith said, if Freddie says it's time to qualify, you're going to qualify, and we're pushing him about 5 miles an hour backwards from the lower pits up near the old pagoda. And he's cussing me all the way up there and cussing everybody that is pushing him because he didn't want to qualify. He says, I haven't got enough rubber left in my right rear tire. And I says, you got more than 4 laps left in it, and now's the time to qualify. You'll make up more positions now than you will tomorrow. And I said, I'll see you later, buddy. And dashed upstairs to Pagoda to be on the air with Floyd Davis, a past winner. And he had a radio program, and I got on it. And just as the gun went off, the car was already rolling. They were pushing it off. The engine was running. They pushed it off. The wheels turned maybe about 3 revolutions when the gun went off. And Floyd was complimenting me on sitting on the pole, breaking the records and all that. And I said, well, we got one more car out there. And you can't count your chickens before they hatch. When that checker drops, why, I'm still on the pole, fine. If I'm not, he could be, you know. And he says, oh, no, he's a rookie. He won't make it. And the car started, was smoking, too. And he says, see, no time on the first lap. Apparently, the car isn't going too good. But he was doing such a smooth job that it was impossible to note that he was breaking a record at that time. Well, Tom Carnegie finally blasted out on the third lap his first lap time as a new record. And consequently, the other laps did the same thing. And he did sit on the pole and blew me right off of it, blew me right out of the tub and put me in the middle position. He won a trip to Bermuda, and I think there was something like $1,000 involved. So he and Mary had a good trip to Bermuda, and that was it.
Walt Faulkner, by the way, if you're curious, would finish seventh in that 1950 Indianapolis 500 in his Grant Piston Ring special. 28th for Freddie Agabashian. He would run 64 laps before an oil line would expire him. But when it comes to significant cars and pole positions, Mike, reality is Agabashian got to drive in one of the more famous cars of the era.
Absolutely. The first turbocharged Indianapolis race car, the Cummins diesel, that's definitely one of the cars that people talk about still to this day. I mean, obviously a striking, you know, beautiful car, and that's one of those race cars that, you know, you see it and you know immediately what it is.
Couple of clips we will play back to back, beginning with Freddie Agabashian talking about that Cummins diesel, and then right after that, the historian emeritus of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Donald Davidson, on his recollection.
I drove a Cummins diesel one year. Yes, that was in 1952. That was a research and development project of Cummins Engine Company, and I was advisor on the engineering department on that for a year, and we set that little dude on the pole and kind of electrified the racing fraternity and the world in general, because that's about the first time we obtained international news on all of the papers in Europe and etc.
Wow.
And it did make a big hit.
A big splash.
Yeah, but
all over the continent.
By the way, we introduced the turbocharger. That was the first turbocharger run at the Speedway. So we have the honor of that anyway, Cummins Engine Company does.
Yeah, I learned, this is such an educational program, I learned just the other night what exactly a turbocharger was and what it does and the whole principle behind it.
It's a big fat air pump driven by waste gases out of the
exhaust. Drives all that stuff back in there.
With BTUs that come out of an exhaust pipe and pressures. It operates as a turbine wheel, and it pumps air into it, increasing compression and horsepower.
Not as complicated as they would have you believe.
No, it's easy. Instead of pumping water, it pumps air. That's all it amounts to. The thing ran, I think, 106 or 108 inch wheelbase, which was legal, and cars have run a longer wheelbase than that. And the car weighed 3,250 pounds dry, curb weight.
There was plenty of diversity within the 1952 starting field. For instance, three of the first four starting cars were supercharged or some form of supercharging, and on the pole was a Cummins diesel, which caused a huge upset and amount of publicity that people still talk about to this day, because it was Columbus, Indiana, Cummins Engine Company produced this special car. Curtis Kraft built the chassis, and it had a six-cylinder truck engine that was laid over on its side with the drive shaft going facing down the left-hand side of the car, and the cockpit could be all the way over to the right side with the driver sitting down low, Fred Agabation being the driver. And the truck engine, it was enormous cubic inch displacement. Now, in previous years, the diesels had were given a break on qualifying speed where they only had to meet a minimum speed in order to be included in the field, whether or not they were one of the fastest 33. Well, that was gone in 52. But whereas the regular racing engines were restricted to 274 cubic inches unsupercharged or 183 if supercharged, the diesel was 401 cubic inches with an assist. And it's described at the time as a supercharger or a turbo supercharger. In fact, it was a turbocharger and the very first one ever used at the Speedway. And in fact, it was that implement that caused the car's undoing. But anyway, Agabation realized in testing before May, he told the crew, he said, we've got a rocket ship here. Let's kind of keep everything under wraps and not let everybody see what we've got because they may want to change the specs on us. So all the way through practice, he was accused of sandbagging, which means never show a complete lap. And not only was he accused of it, he was guilty. And so the car was capable of quite a bit more speed than practice laps would show. But when it came time to qualify, no sense in holding back anymore. And he broke the 1-4 lap track records. Great tire wear. In fact, the tread on the right rear was flapping when he came in because he'd been dirt tracking the car, which was quite a bit heavier than the others. Typical car of the time was about 1,700 to 1,800 pounds. I think the diesel was 2,400 pounds dry, and when it was loaded up and ready to go racing with driver and all of the lubricants, it was more like 3,250. So it was a really heavy car.
Not only was Freddie Agabation a great race car driver, he was a great influence on younger drivers. Bill Vukovich II, for example, says Agabation was a giant help in his rookie year.
When I came to Indianapolis, I got a lot of help from a man named Freddie Agabation, who I'm sure you've all heard of. I had a problem getting up to speed, and Freddie come down and just give me a little talk, a calming down talk, and told me to cool a little bit. I was actually trying too hard, and by golly, he was right. I went back out and followed his advice and picked up 4 or 5 miles an hour, and everything was great. So really, at the Speedway, the guy that helped me the most my first year was Freddie Agabation.
Like many when it comes to the Indianapolis 500-mile race, there may be those from a generation that remember Freddie Agabation not necessarily for his driving days, but rather his time on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network. He would serve as a driver expert, analyst, if you will, from 1959 to 1965. Then again, he served in that role after Lynn Sutton had filled in from 1973 to 1977. But it was shortly after 1977, a few years later, when he discussed why the arrangement had ended that ended his time with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway radio network.
One other quick question.
Yes, sir.
Were you beat with Paul Page doing the color or comments at the race?
No, sir.
Oh, you won't be this year?
No, sir.
Oh, well,
I wasn't last year, and they decided to make a change to improve the program by virtue of putting on a present-day driver that may not make the race. And in that manner, they have a current driver that you may be more interested in, as well as having a different driver each and every year instead of the same old color kid.
Well, I enjoyed your comments always through the years, so I'm going to miss you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Yes, I'm super work with Sid. Boy, I can remember that when I was a kid. Here we go.
That was, I believe, Kevin Calabro there as well. Is that right, Mike?
That's correct. And so we got to hear why Freddie didn't come back after 1977. And we got
that was succinct, Mike Hiss, right?
Yeah, we got Mike Hiss and Billy Scott and several other. And what's interesting about that, though, is he said that they wanted current drivers, and then Roger Ward ended up coming on and doing it for 5 years after that. So
that's right. In 1980, Roger Ward joined. Correct.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure exactly what happened there.
Later, of course, Gordon Johncock, Bobby Unser, Parnelli Jones, Pancho Carter, Johnny Rutherford, Derek Daly, then back to Johnny Rutherford, a number of different drivers, Johnny Parsons, Davey Hamilton, Kenny Breck, and as well James Hinchcliffe. I remember when Robbie Buell did it, and then Anders Krohn served for a number of years, and now Davey Hamilton once again back. Although this year, keep in mind that Davey Hamilton, I believe, is going to be a race strategist once again, so we shall see who it might be that ends up in the booth coming up on race day. Keep an ear for that.
Do you know, Jake, why Freddie had to stop doing it in 1965 and then came back in 73? Do you know why that was?
No, but I bet if you asked him, he'd say, no, sir. But you can elaborate.
Yeah. No, actually, what happened is the program, the radio network was sponsored by Champion Spark Plug, and that's who Freddie worked for. So Freddie was able to work on the radio broadcast because the sponsor was Champion Spark Plug, which is a Toledo-based company. That's one of the reasons I care about this so much. And then when they stopped sponsoring the program and it went to their rival, Autolite, since Freddie worked for Champion, he wasn't allowed to do the radio anymore. So they got Len Sutton for that next 6 years. And then when Autolite dropped it, then Freddie was able to come back in 1973. So that's actually why Freddie was off from 1966 to 72.
There's a quiz on all of that after the program, by the way, for those that, because that's the thing. Sponsorship is so big, especially in those days, the personal connections and sponsors could certainly be a factor in things. And many drivers had big name recognition around the speedway, synonymous with areas outside of just racing itself. Like, for example, Joey Chitwood, who was synonymous with racing and thrills from his Daredevil shows that were all the rage of the era. And known primarily for his thrill shows, he told Donald Davidson on the Talk of Gasoline Alley that he was an innovator in safety when it came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, notably...
Joey Chitwood, welcome to WIBC's The Talk of Gasoline Alley. We've been having current drivers on so far, and now we're going to have some retired races on this evening.
Well, thank you. The only thing you left out of that 1950 race, in 1950 we got second.
Well, I heard about that, but then why did they give you fifth? Somebody lost a car.
Well, one thing, I never won a race at Indianapolis, but at least I got three firsts. And my one first was in 1950, and when the race is over, they give us second place. Mm-hmm. So we go to bed that night, and the next morning I wake up, and the headlines are, I got fifth.
Yeah.
So we tried to protest the race, and Wilbur Shaw says, you can't protest the race 30 minutes after the race. And I said, well, 30 minutes after the race, I know I didn't win it.
Yeah.
So I hope you don't mind if I go.
No, please do. We got 50 minutes.
Yeah, so anyway, so we protested the race, and then he had to put up a $100,000 bond, which we did. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we didn't gain anything. We still got fifth.
Yeah.
So the next year, Wilbur Shaw changed the ruling from you could protest the race an official till the next day.
Yes.
Which makes it good.
Yeah.
So that's one first. The other first was in 1941, I drove for Joe Linke, and front stretch was still bricks.
Yeah.
And I couldn't keep my foot on the throttle. So I tried to get him to change the throttle. He wouldn't do it. So I go out in the sprint car and take my safety belt out of the dirt track car.
All right.
Well, when everybody heard that, of course, the two guys that were very important got on me was Wilbur Shaw and Rex Mays. Rex Mays was head of the driver's committee, and they both come up to me and says, Joey, we hear you got a safety belt in there. I says, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I said, I got in there. Can I keep my foot on the throttle? The bricks are so rough, uh-huh. and the guy won't change my throttle. So to make a long story short, they said, well, Wilbur Shaw said, if I'd have had a seat belt, I got thrown over the wall in somebody's yard over here. So that would be here.
Yeah.
And Rex May said, at Dayton last year, he said, I got thrown out and lit in a tree, and I'm still here. So I argued with him. I said, I want to qualify the car, I got to have a safety belt.
And they wouldn't let you?
No, well, they finally let me do it. But anyway, they were trying to talk me out of it.
Yeah.
So they saw the belt that I had, which is an Army surplus belt, mm-hmm. and a quick release on them.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got to have the belt to qualify the car. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, if you see you're going to hit the wall, would you release that quick release? And I said, I will. So at least I got away with the belt. So I got the first and having the first seat belt at Indianapolis.
Joey Chitwood, by the way, would go on to race at the Indianapolis 500 on seven occasions between 1940 and 1950. He was relieved by Sam Hanks in 1946. He had relief help from Paul Russo and Johnny Shackelford in 1948 and Tony Bettenhausen in 1950. Oh, how some of those names all intertwine. And, Mike, if people are hearing this and thinking, Joey Chitwood, I wasn't familiar with the Daredevil show driver of which they speak, but I know that name, it's because obviously the name in terms of lineage still carried on in impactful form around the Speedway in the Centennial era.
That's correct, because he is the grandfather of Joey Chitwood III, who was the president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and he was also president of the Daytona International Speedway at one point. So a long family history for the Chitwoods.
When we come back inside the Hensley Legal Group Command Center, we will talk about one driver with a famous nickname and how exactly he got it when we take our look back at some of the drivers of yesteryear here on Beyond the Bricks.
You have a vision for what's next. Now, bring it to life. With UCF Online, you'll gain the skills to thrive in industries shaping the future. Because your next move isn't just a step forward, it's inventing the future you want. Your next move. Own it with UCF Online.
Knowing your home or business is safe is what SafeTouch cares about most. And right now, you can switch to SafeTouch for free. No hassle, just the best technology, seamless installation, and 24/7 monitoring. Plus, a free smoke detector. Call 888-723-8682 or visit safetouch.com. Free switch with signed 60-month agreement. $99 fee with 36-month agreement. Includes panel, translator, and smoke detector only. Certain restrictions apply. Offer ends February 28th. See safetouch.com for details. State license DF2000-2049.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Inside the Hensley Legal Group Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Jake Query, Mike Thompson taking a look at some of the great names of yesteryear, like Duke Nalen, who made 10 starts between 1938 and 1953. But how exactly did Dennis become Duke? Well, he told that exact story on the Talk of Gasoline Alley.
The name Duke. Tell us how you got the nickname.
Well, there was five boys in our family, and the oldest boy was name was Daniel. Huh. And, of course, he threw a fire as a youngster, 6 years old. He perished. And with that, my name being Dennis, and Danny was pretty close.
Yeah.
So the family kind of called me Duke McGluke from the Hydra and Wendy, and that's where I got the name Duke.
So it had nothing to do with you being a natty dresser then?
No, that was my idol was Ralph DePalma.
Yes.
And he was the nattiest of all the race drivers, I thought. And I always hoped that I could pattern myself in dress after Ralph DePalma, and that's what they called me the Duker.
Well, you must have had that early, because I understood that even as a teenager, when you were 14, 15 years old and you were dating the girls, you used to put on the suit and the tie and the whole works.
Well, not only that, but, you know, I used to wear the tux and the all that bit. In fact, I was an usher at the Tower Theater, and you wore the little bow tie and the rolled-up bib and all of that sort of thing. So,
well, you were always beautifully attired when you were driving, and I know that the women used to go crazy when you'd line up for the start of a 500 and you had the blue suit with the buttons going up the side when most of them were driving in t-shirts. You had uniforms before they had uniforms.
And then we had candy stitched on there too, because I was a smoker in those days, and of course when I was racing I couldn't smoke.
Yeah.
So I just pulled those lifesavers or candy drops off that I had stitched on the belt, and that way I had something to consume.
Nalen won the pole for the Indianapolis 500 twice. He finished third in 1948, but may best be remembered for surviving a terrible crash in 1949. This is how it sounded on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This treacherous northeast turn has claimed another car, Duke Nalen, the powerful Novi number 54, after setting a blazing speed, lost the wheel coming into the northeast turn. The car skidded immediately, smacked the wall sideways, and burst into flames. It bounded off into another spin, and came back striking the wall head-on this time. Now, at this point, Duke looked as if he loosened his safety belt and either jumped or was thrown from the racer. The car continued pancaking the wall and finally came to rest flush against the outside wall. Now, at this time, fuel leaking from the wrecked car spread over the entire track, making it necessary for cars rounding the curve to cut at least 10 feet onto the sod on the inside of the track.
Part of the legacy of the Speedway is that of perseverance among its drivers, and that's true of Duke Nalen, who was back in 1951 and back on the pole after missing the race in 1950. He talked about that comeback on the Talk of Gasoline Alley.
In getting back to passing that area that I crashed the wall in 1949, it took me several laps to get by there and, in my practice and try to get back into the swing of things. And it makes you sit up and take notice. And after, through practice, I kept telling myself, practice will make perfect. And finally, they whitewashed the wall where I couldn't see where I had collided into the wall. And it's like putting blinds on a horse. You know, I went through there pretty good.
And in a rare piece of audio tonight, Joey Chitwood said the only time he was scared at the Speedway involved that famous Duke Nalen crash of 1949.
No, unfortunately, at the 500, I never spun or hit the wall. Maybe that's the reason I didn't go any faster than I did. But at the Speedway, I've never hit the wall or was really scared, except the one time that Duke Nalen hit the wall. He was lapping me going up the backstretch. And he gave me the finger, and when I came up, there was a big pool of fire coming down from where he had hit the wall. And being a stunt man, I just went right through it. A lot of the guys went down through the infield, but I went right through it. The only time I was ever scared at Indianapolis. But in the thrill show, I've been hurt a lot of times.
Many great names from yesteryear. Thanks to Mike Thompson, Landon Coons. I'm Jake Query. Thanks to all of you for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
16 years ago, I started working as a CNA in the hospital. I loved it. On the day I decided to enroll in the nursing program at Rasmussen University, it was afternoon of my 35th birthday. I was hanging out with a friend, and they had just questioned me what I was going to do with this next chapter of my life. I immediately had said, I want to go to nursing school. So I actually had contact information from an advisor at Rasmussen, contacted her, and actually ended up starting like 3 weeks later. My name is Cherish Adams, and I'm a Rasmussen University graduate.
Learn more at rasmussen.edu.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.